Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Technelysis Research ARM podcast on Connected Car. Pleased to be joined this morning by Arwid Nyestroy. He's the president and CEO of Mercedes-Benz R&D here in Silicon Valley, as well as Will Too, and Will is the director of automotive segment marketing for ARM. And my name, by the way, is Bob O'Donnell, and I'm the founder and chief analyst at Technelysis Research. So, gentlemen, you know, there's a lot of talk about smart car and connected car and car electronics in general. But I think there's also a lot of confusion about what it actually means. What is a smart car? What is a connected car? I mean, I think a lot of people associate connected cars also with autonomous cars, even though those things are different. And I think it's important that we kind of try and distinguish those. So, Arwid, we'll talk with you. Daimler-Benz has been here in Silicon Valley for 20 years doing research around user experience and connected cars. What is, you know, the Mercedes-Benz definition of a connected car or a smart car?
Yes, Bob. It's great to be here and talk about it today. And yes, we've been here for 20 years. So many historical things we've done here. We've done here first, like iPod and other stuff, looking way back in times when Google didn't exist. So we have a long history of bringing innovations to the brands of Daimler and mainly, of course, to the brand of Mercedes-Benz. So the connected car is, of course, firstly, getting the car to be connected. So bringing internet to the car, internet access, and that's something which will be absolute standard in the future. So we've already started this for most of our fleet, but it's still moving on. And of course, this serves the customer to use all his digital possibilities he has, live his digital lifestyle that he has outside of the vehicle, also inside the vehicle, which we have already introduced with different applications like Digital Drive Style, for example, some years back. And as the vehicle becomes always on, always connected, customers can really access all the data that they have access to in normal situations when they're outside of the vehicle. But this will, of course, move forward as we look in the future. It will be more and more personalized. So whatever you do on your smartphone, what you set in your digital environment will be also available to the customers inside the vehicle. And as we move forward, the vehicles start taking some activities that you would have to do and take some of the tasks that you would have to do and does it automatically. So the vehicle will understand your patterns, how you behave in the vehicle, and start taking some of the settings, make them for you, and automatically recognize when you enter the vehicle, what are you going to do next, and propose what are you going to do next. So it becomes more a digital assistant or digital friend, an intelligent friend, rather than just being a connected device.
Got it. So, and well, we talk about it because you initially described a lot of the connectivity that's really for the individual, but there's also the car itself being connected and the elements and the data that the car generates. And that's part of the connected story as well, right? And in terms of being able to understand what's going on, being able to transmit that data so that, for example, car makers understand if there are any issues or challenges with the car, and then also translating additional updates and things like that, we can start to think of almost car firmware and things of that sort as well. Isn't that true as well?
Yeah, that's absolutely true. Of course, data security is a very important aspect we have to make sure is okay and is working well. And there will certainly be different layers of software. So as you can imagine today, the user experience level of software is something where updates could be easily made and will be made very soon over the air. But there's also levels of software that very much are on the firmware level, really steering and controlling, for example, acceleration. And these will certainly be software functions where data security is of utmost importance, because that actually decides what the vehicle is doing when you drive it. So we see different speed in approaching these possibilities for the different levels of software in the vehicle.
Got it. Will, from the ARM perspective, how does ARM define a smart or connected car?
Well, you know, I think Arwid had a lot of interesting things to say, but I think the big challenge from an ARM perspective, being that we're in the CPU IP business, we look at smarts as defined by how much compute power or compute capability that today's chips can provide. And an example of that is, put in context today, probably the highest level of compute power of an SoC today would be what ARM calls a Cortex Quad A15 and a Quad A7 device. And that would give you, in a 28-nanometer process for those techies out there, you know, about a 21K DMIPS capability. And 2 years from now, you know, ARM's going to have, or our ARM partners will have, Quad A57s and A53s, which, again, you know, 8 cores in an SoC, that'll drive you up to 40K DMIPS. So you're going to double your performance. And then ultimately, having that compute capability is giving you all the ability to figure out, from a smart car standpoint, a definition of smart is, you know, trying to figure out what the contextual awareness of the vehicle is to its environment and what the contextual awareness to the driver or the passengers of the car. And then you evolve that connectivity, and then you need more and more compute capability, even in the cloud. So we're getting into server-based computing. But I look at the connected car as two types of concepts there. I see one, the ability for the upgradable car. You kind of talked a little bit about, you know, firmware updates. You know, the cars are in the future are always going to be utilizing software updates. And then also the ability to achieve the higher level of benefits that everybody wants to see, like the environmental savings. If we can now lock cars together in a Peloton type of, where they can all follow each other in lockstep on freeways when the freeways are congested, or really achieving the highest level of safety, because now, you know, cars are able to communicate acceleration, location, direction to all the other cars to help be predictive to avoid collisions. So that should ultimately benefit safety down the road.
And that's a great point. Now, one thing I want to clarify, a lot of folks don't really understand the ARM business model, and you talked about it. It's CPU IP. So in the actual car, there's not an ARM-branded chip. Who are the branded partners that are using the ARM cores for connected cars?
Well, we have a lot of partners right now that are really focused on this space of connected car, in terms of making cars smarter and connecting them as well. So companies like Renesas, Texas Instruments, NXP, which, you know, merged with Freescale, Qualcomm, NVIDIA, MediaTek. I mean, all these companies are really starting to hone in on the automotive marketplace and are interested in providing that compute capability. And one thing I did, you know, when I talked earlier about all those different CPU engines and giving you some DMIPS numbers, again, that was just the CPU. You know, down the road, some of these companies are now adding GPUs and DSPs to their chips as well. So the compute capability just only goes up beyond what those numbers I shared with you earlier.
Yeah, companies like NVIDIA, I know, for example, are doing a great deal in connected car. So Arvid, given that, you know, this is the horsepower that is being provided to you as, you know, the car maker, how do you see leveraging this increase? You know, Will talked about, you know, doubling the performance. What sort of things can Daimler-Benz do with that increased CPU capability as we move forward?
Yeah, I would fully agree to what Will is saying. This development in computation power is, of course, a very important enabling technology for us to start doing things we couldn't have done before. So if you look, for example, at 3D rendering, that's one activity we will introduce in the next E-class, where we create a Hollywood-type quality visual experience inside the vehicle on the screen. So moving away from pure text information that you would have on a screen to a cinematic way of showing things. And to actually calculate and compute these pictures and do the rendering on board in the vehicle, we need this computation power. So that enables us to really create a beautiful and powerful consumer experience that we want to have for our customers in the vehicle. So yeah, very important capability that we get provided by these companies that like ARM, like NVIDIA, making the chip at the end.
Yeah, that's great. So one of the questions is, you know, there's been a lot of debate and discussion about what we're going to see sort of in the near term and then what we're going to see, say, 5 years from now. So from a Daimler-Benz perspective, what sort of things can consumers expect in cars, say, over the next 1 to 2 years? And then what should they expect, say, 5 years from now?
Yeah. So as it becomes more and more connected, and you can, of course, get access to all the information that you normally use in your digital lifestyle, and I mentioned it a little bit beforehand, it becomes more automatic for you. So you don't do things on your own anymore. You don't apply the settings on your own. The vehicle will understand who is now in the vehicle, who is sitting on the seat, what does he prefer, what does he like, what is the actual context, what's the time of the day, is it a Monday, where is he driving Monday morning, if he's sitting alone in the vehicle, he might go to office, so we propose to navigate to the office. So these things will happen, that we predict the customer's wishes and behavior, and make it a much better customer experience to just be in the vehicle and have the vehicle take over tasks that you would have normally done yourself.
That's
great. This becomes more and more as we introduce machine learning capabilities, artificial intelligence. You could make an intelligent conversation with your vehicle maybe 5 years from now, where the vehicle maybe even listen to dialogues that you are having in the vehicle, and it will understand well if you're talking to the vehicle or talking to the other passengers. So it's going to be very exciting to experience that in the future.
That's interesting. That's great. Now, you brought up a couple of things as well. I want to transition to the topic of ADAS, or automated driver assistance systems. And so some of the intelligence, as you described, is going to the user interface, so to speak, inside. But some of it's going to how the car functions. So, Arvid, we'll start with you first. Talk a little bit about autonomous driving. Again, we've seen all kinds of stories and all this press about, some people predicting autonomous driving, practically this year, according to Tesla. But realistically, we know it's obviously going to take a little bit longer. Give us your perspective, and then, Will, I'd love to get your perspective on that as well.
Yeah. Of course, the big challenge in autonomous driving is to make it really fully autonomous. So there have been around, and there are in the marketplace, many solutions that take over the driving functions in certain situations, be it on a highway, on a German autobahn, be it adaptive cruise control, where you use your radar and you don't really have to accelerate and brake anymore. But the key challenge is to make it available in every situation and allow the vehicle to really take not only control, but take responsibility for the control. And this will happen in various stages. So what we see today is that, for example, the steering function is taken over by the vehicle in certain situations when you use adaptive cruise control, when you don't use it, but you just make sure you don't depart from the lane you're in. And there's other situations where you use adaptive cruise control, but you're steering on your own. So different situations, who's doing what. And then this will evolve to really have the vehicle do most of the work. You're just observing and just supervising as a driver. And then there will be the flip when the vehicle is in the supervising mode, and you will have, as a driver, the necessity to be ready to take over again. But there is a certain time that you can have to get back to the vehicle, concentrate, and then we see the fully autonomous driving. So it's important now to watch who's really offering what exactly.
Right.
And of course, again, safety is the key. To this driving situation, so we have to make sure we really enable the vehicle to do the right thing in the right situation.
So, give us a time frame from your perspective. When does that switch that you mentioned, the flip switch to more a truly autonomous vehicle, happen from your viewpoint?
For my viewpoint, I mean, if it's independent of the situation you are in, be it on a highway, be it in city traffic, be it in cross country driving, I'd say it's another 10 years from now, certainly.
Yeah. Okay.
And if we look at fully autonomous vehicles where you wouldn't even need a driver, I would add another five years for this one.
Yeah, that's good. Because I think that's important to provide a perspective, because, again, there's been people writing and talking as if it was practically around the corner, which doesn't seem very realistic. Mm-hmm. Will, from the R perspective, how are you guys thinking about ADAS, and what sort of things are you doing to help enable this?
Well, I mean, we talked about the compute capability earlier, but I just one thing of clarification. You asked earlier, kind of autonomous, and you said autonomous driver assistance systems. Actually, the ADAS term is advanced driver system, and that goes to that confusion where you have whether it's autonomous driving or really automated driving. I mean, I think all the features that we're looking at today, the adaptive cruise control or the lane keeping, those are really just automated features that are building blocks to allow for autonomous driving to become a reality much, you know, much further down the road in the future. And ultimately, to really be autonomous, I feel like, you know, you really need to have the connected capability to be there as well. So it's almost like a step of automated, connected car, and then ultimately an autonomous car. But one of the key elements that I think that are pretty important in all of the march toward autonomy and increasing the automated aspect of it is all these different sensors that we are looking at the cars. I mean, some of them were mentioned earlier. I mean, we've got the cameras, we've got the radar, the LiDAR, the ultrasonics, and the accelerometers. And now we're looking at even things like microphones and heart rate sensors and seat positioning and infrared. You know, some of them are to, again, go back to determining how the car is in relation to its environment, but also how is the driver in relation to the vehicle. And the reason why I bring up the driver to relation vehicle, NHTSA defines that there are five levels, 0 to 4, so 0, 1, 2, 3, 4. And probably the most difficult level of is the level 3, which is what they call limited self-driving automation. And in that situation, the car has to be able to, you have to decide whether the driver is driving it or the machine is driving it. So you have to realize now, the car needs to decide whether the driver is even capable of driving it. Did he have a heart attack? So I think, you know, you start to look at some of the sensors in there to understand the context or the fitness or the health of the driver actually become important for this level 3. Because actually level 4, in a way, you don't have to worry about the driver, because the car is automatically taking you destination to destination. There may not even be a steering wheel in that car. But if you have ability for a level 3, that means the driver may need to take over or may intervene. And that becomes a very complicated, very difficult situation to be in from a compute and a computational standpoint.
Yeah, and it brings up a great point, too. The other thing that I find interesting, you know, as an observer, a very interested observer in all this, is there's the technological capability, and then there's the psychological concern around this. And Arvid, you mentioned this briefly. You talked at the beginning about security. We've all heard and read the stories about, you know, connected cars being taken over. And, you know, that incites incredible fear amongst, you know, the general population. So how do we kind of address these things? What are some of the key technologies that are going to help enable us to make these kind of gradual steps forward? How do you, you know, from your perspective, how do you see that evolving?
See, I think that's a challenge, that with the connectivity, you have the challenge that every connected server, software system, digital system has. So it's going to be the same challenge for us to always be on the top edge of technology, top edge of knowing security measures we have to involve and to put into the vehicle. And on the other hand, we can, from the vehicle side, of course, make sure to introduce certain layers and a clever architecture that makes sure that even if there was a breach at some level, it doesn't interfere with the safety crucial functions of the vehicle. So there's many things you could do. At the end, of course, it's a big challenge, because that's the challenge that every company that is online has, and every product that is online, and everything in the Internet of Things will have that challenge. And this includes the vehicle. And we'll, of course, do our best to control that risk. And I think there are good ways in the vehicle and good possibilities to, with the architecture set up, to make sure nothing goes wrong.
And what other technologies, beyond security, because as you said, that's an issue that everybody faces, car-specific securities, other than some of the things we've talked about, we'll mention things like LiDAR and some of these visual perspectives. What other interesting technologies are you seeing from your perspective that Daimler is really interested in at this point?
Yeah, and I would just also agree with Will. He mentioned the most important sensors that you would find in the vehicle. On the other side, what's very important is, of course, the map information. So as you may have heard, Audi, BMW, and Daimler have together purchased the company here.
Yes.
From Nokia, and here is providing high-definition digital mapping data as of today already, static information, and that's an extremely important information that is also needed for autonomous driving. And the relation and the data exchange back to the map information is very important. So there has to be discussed how much of this is onboard, how much is offboard, how does the connection work. And of course, with the joint purchase of that company and keeping it open and independent to everyone, we of course plan to have as much data coming into this platform and becoming available to all the customers that want to use the platform that HERE offers. And that will definitely increase the data availability, the data quality. Will it make it dynamic? Real time is at the end the future we want to have, so that autonomous driving can really rely on real-time traffic information, real-time environmental information, be it the lane markings or the traffic lights, or looking at other services that HERE might offer about the environment around you, businesses, where you go, what you go, what you do, where you will park your car, all these things. And that's why our investment in HERE is so important for us as a company.
That makes a lot of sense. And that reminds me, that leads kind of to another part of the discussion, which is the collaboration between automotive and tech. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of interesting. Here we are in Silicon Valley, and I'm speaking with someone from Daimler, and the tech guy is actually based in Detroit. So it's kind of ironic, but it does sort of reflect the fact that there is a lot of, and obviously with Germany as well, of course. But, you know, there is a very interesting degree of connection between the tech industry and the automotive industry. And we mentioned briefly at the beginning, you know, Daimler here has been here in Silicon Valley for 20 years. But Darwin, you first, or Arvid, you first, sorry. In terms of your perspective on how those interactions work and what can we expect moving forward?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, these interactions will be, of course, to some extent, cooperation, but we will, of course, still have a certain amount of competition, and that's how the future will look like. As we just discussed, there are enabling technologies that only become available now in these years, so we have to make use of them to have a modern and state-of-the-art product and provide the best and most powerful customer experience to our customers. On the other hand, there will be suppliers that come from the tech world that maybe don't know automotive grade that much. So we are here to discuss and get involved with them very, very soon when they start designing their product. Let them understand what automotive grade means. Life cycles are different. Quality aspiration is very different. It's a different way of doing business in automotive. So we want them to understand this. And then we can use their products in our vehicles. On the other hand, there will be that's a cooperation part. On the other hand, we will have to describe and agree with these companies and lay out where do we compete and where do we cooperate. And this is, of course, valid, as you certainly will ask in your next question, for the big ones, the big digital giants. So yeah. There will be cooperation activities, and we are discussing with all of them on a regular basis, and I think every OEM does. And there will be activities where we compete with one another, of course, in the fact of providing a car at the end. That could be one of the competition areas.
Yeah, no, it's going to be interesting to watch, and I will come back to that. But first, I want to get Will's perspective. Will, from your perspective, again, here you are an ARM employee based in Detroit working with the automotive industry. Give us your take. That's a very unique spot for you to be.
Well, yeah, it is. And I think as a technologist, we want to come and bring ideas about technology closer to the automotive centers like Stuttgart and Detroit to make them more aware of what's going on. And you can see the traditional automotive centers getting closer to Silicon Valley as well to do the same thing. So, but from my perspective, I mean, one of the biggest barriers that I think we're going to see as we move toward autonomous driving, you know, maybe, you know, it's a kind of, again, you know, we saw infotainment, the same kind of thing where there was a little bit of a bubble in the 90s. And then now you can see infotainment taking stronghold in every device in the cars. But, you know, ADAS has that same type of potential of having that bubble as well, or that big barrier, which I think is the connected car. And having that V to X, whether it's a building or another car or a freeway system, you know, accessing data from other sensors other than the vehicle itself, the one that's being driven, I mean, that's just a whole nother level of complexity. And people talk about things like, are we going to use LTE, the cellular infrastructure, or are we going to have our own dedicated short-range communication, and what's been proposed is a 5.9 gigahertz to communicate and have it dedicated for safety reasons. We don't want to have interference from other communication mechanisms. And so this is where I think the most opportunity for innovation is. You see a lot of different startup companies, both in the car space and the companies like Mercedes-Benz, focusing very heavily because things like CarPlay and OAA trying to display data from a smartphone onto a infotainment thing. I mean, we're going to solve that. That's not a problem. this connected car thing is much more intricate, much more difficult to do. But again, this is the great thing about what you just talked about, the Silicon Valley and Detroit getting together. Regardless of whether it's Detroit, Silicon Valley, Stuttgart, everybody wants to get in the car business. Cars are sexy again. Even cities are trying to get into it. I mean, you've got Ann Arbor trying to make a M-City, which is for testing. You know, Sweden has Gothenburg for testing. Silicon Valley, they've got the Geo Momentum station for testing of vehicles. I mean, so everybody's getting in on this autonomous driving movement.
Yeah, you bring up a great point. It is interesting to watch how this goes. And you also brought up a point that I am now going to ask Arvid, which is, you know, about the role that some of the really big guys, the Apples, the Googles, you know, it's a very interesting thing to watch, because clearly while there's familiarity with those operating systems for things like infotainment, and there's of course potentially interest for them to do more, you know, if I get into a Mercedes, there's a Mercedes experience that I think Mercedes wants to hold on to. It's the customer experience. And I would imagine that'd be very difficult to just kind of say, oh, well, we're going to hand that over, you know, in terms of the user experience to another vendor. So I would love to hear your thoughts on that particular point.
Yeah. Let me first say, I think cars have always been sexy. Well, they're not just becoming sexy again. Maybe it's even that they make the smartphones or the whole experience, the digital experience, even sexier. So I think we cannot really. It's not possible today that the smartphone or whatever a smartphone or business ecosystem provider would offer can really replace what the car interface needs to have. There's so many things. If you step into an S-Class or Mercedes-Benz today, there's hundreds of settings you can apply to make the optimum customer experience for yourself, be it the seat massage or air conditioned situations. So this is specific for the vehicle, and it's different in different vehicles. And we will always make sure this was the most beautiful and powerful experience for our customers. So that's something that a smartphone provider or an Apple iOS or whatever Android Auto provider will not really integrate into his platform that he will offer. So there is more, obviously, to the screen and the head unit and the vehicle than just what the digital services you are used to from your smartphone. And I think this will stay the same. And this will, as you say, be a holistic customer experience, which the brand defines. And I think it's going to be very important to keep that, because that's what makes the vehicle it is.
Right. That makes perfect sense. All right. I want to move on to the last point to sort of try and summarize everything. You know, we're headed towards the big consumer electronics show. And we know there's going to be a tremendous amount of announcements that are car and auto related, smart car and connected car and autonomous car related. How should we best understand this? What's the context from which we should understand these things? Because I'm sure there's going to be some pretty outrageous claims made, and there's going to be a lot of questions in the general press. Will, I'll start with you. What's your, you know, overall perspective of how we should see and understand the announcements from CES?
Well, you know, as I talk to a lot of OEMs, like the traditional companies like Daimler Benz and GM and Ford and VW, all these different companies, you know, I might be a little bit biased. I'm in Detroit, right? So, you know, what I see is that's clearly that, you know, the traditional automotive guys are much more command and execution oriented. And certainly you see Silicon Valley kind of ideas and innovation oriented. And as we look at CES now, what I think is interesting is everybody's trying to grab the automotive microphone. You've got Google, Tesla, Faraday, Ativa, Local Motors, Next EV. I mean, there's all these different startups. Like I said, automotive is sexy again, and everybody wants to have the microphone. But interesting enough, at CES, you know, I think it's interesting. The last two keynote speakers were from Detroit, right? So you had GM this year, and last year it was Ford. So I'm waiting for, you know, Arvid to get up there and talk at CES.
Last year it was Daimler.
The reality is, I think people recognize the impact of the traditional guys when it comes to automotive. I mean, I still think they everybody's fighting for the microphone, but at the end of the day, CES gives the microphone to who?
Yeah, to the car vendors. And to Arvid's point, actually, Daimler did speak last year.
Yeah, this year. This is January.
Yeah, yeah, so this January. That's correct. So speaking of which, so Arvid, give us your perspective then. You know, again, pulling it all together from a Daimler perspective, how do we understand how, you know, how this is going to evolve, what's realistic in the near term, all that kind of viewpoint.
Yeah, I think I fully agree that is that really CES has become very automotive in the last, let's say, 2 years. And certainly also the very exciting show cars like the F015 we had did a big, very big contribution. But I see that it really is a big chance for automotive OEMs to really enhance and redefine the overall customer experience. Now, having the ability to do much more within the vehicle, we talked about the enabling technologies today, you can offer much more to the customers. And the experience, I think, becomes very different. It becomes much more a fully immersed experience, because in a vehicle, it's different from a smartphone. You don't look at your smartphone and type things, or you hear things, or you watch videos. But in the vehicle, you will sense that the whole vehicle will be digitalized, and you will be immersed in this environment. And that's a very, I think, a much broader experience, much more emotional experience also, than just using any electronic device. And it's going to be very important for all automotive OEMs to really leverage this chances and these opportunities, because the customers will definitely change to a big extent. The younger customers are already different, because they are digital natives. They know these opportunities and these tools they have, they use it every day. So it's important to understand what the potential opportunities are here for in this digitalization trend for the automotive OEMs. And this will, I think, make vehicles much more exciting, and will also increase the size and the amount of digitalization that you feel every day, and you will feel it when you're driving. So it's a big opportunity. It's very exciting. And it's moving very fast. Another challenge for automotive companies to find solutions to adapt to these very, very, very fast and short life cycles.
Yeah, that's great. Well, and it is, I think, the other interesting takeaway that I see from all this is that we're seeing evolution, but it's moving at a moderate pace. We're going to see a lot of things happening, but it's not like overnight we're going to get to everything that people have talked about. And I think it's important that we keep that sort of context. But very exciting indeed times, very exciting for the automotive industry. Well, we hope that you've enjoyed this podcast. Again, I'd like to thank Arvid Nyestroy, the president and CEO of Mercedes-Benz R&D USA, as well as Will Tu. Will is the director of automotive segment marketing at ARM. And again, I'm Bob O'Donnell, the founder and chief analyst at Technalysis Research. Thanks for listening, and we'll talk to you later. Bye-bye.